tere kaunist juunikuud, pare podcasti sõber! Seekordne episood on selle hooaja viimane ja keskmesse on toodud üks olulisemaid teemasid, mis tänased juhte ja personali inimesi puudutab. See on mitmekesisus, võrdsus ja kaasatus, ehk see inglisekeelne tähekombinatsioon DEI, mida mitmel pool erialastes välja annetas üha enam kohtab. Mul oli suur hea meel stuudios tervitada kaht inspireerivat personalivaldkonna entusiasti, kelle teekond on neid toonud teiselt poolt maailma, Nigeeriast ja Filippiinidelt Eestisse. Erinev kultuuriline taust ja väärtuspilt andsid meile väga palju vestlusainet nii mitmekesisuse olulisuse, selle suurendamise põhjuste, sammude ja muudatuste juhtimise teemal üldiselt. Elaine Santos ja Uva Odefa jagasid oma lugu sellest, millised on olnud nende teekonnad töösse inimestega ja tuli välja, et selles oli palju ühiseid jooni. Neil on kahe peale kokku lausa 3 dekaadi kogemust rahvusvahelistes ettevõtetes ning tänaseks ka tunnetus sellest, kuidas meil siin Eestis asjad käivad. Kuna teemad on laiemad ja multikultuursed, siis vestlusring oli kõigile ühises inglise keeles. Minul oli hea meel omalt poolt pare podcastide saatejuhi rollis veel viimast korda mikrofonide taga kohtuda ja uuel hooajal on juba uued tuuled ja ka saatejuht. Aga mina tänan omalt poolt nii podcasti töörühma koosseisus Kärt Kinnas, Ilona Loet, Kadri Kiigema ja paljud teised, kes mind alati nii külaliste leidmisel kui küsimuste loomisel toetasid. Ja kõiki kuulajad ka, kes oma positiivse tagasisidega hoogu ja julgust ning inspiratsiooni juurde andsid. Ma soovin teile põnevat kuulamist ja jätkuvat uudisimu ja vaatust uuele ning sooja ja akusid laadivat suve. Hello, Uva. Hello, Elaine.
Hi, Annika.
I am super glad to welcome you here in our Bora's office. And actually, it's the first podcast in English that I've hosted here in this season. I'm super happy to have you here.
Pleasure to be here. Same here.
And the reason why we invited you here was to actually mostly focus on this emerging field in HR called diversity, equity and inclusion, so DEY. But we warmed up in the kitchen and I understood that we actually need to cover a couple of more topics as well. So whatever sparks up your interest as well and what you want to say here, the mic is free. But what I would invite to share for the intro would be your story of actually landing in HR field and also coming to Estonia. So Uva, maybe you share first.
Okay, I'll go first. So yes, incidentally, I stumbled into HR. Yeah, I didn't start out wanting to practice HR, but I started out as applying to a company, a HR consulting company in Lagos, Nigeria. And I applied for the personal assistant position to the managing partner. And I started, and then she says, oh, you're very good with people, you're very good with speaking, you're very intuitive. Why don't you try sitting on one of the interviews and just, you know, see how it feels? I did, and then next thing I knew, I was fully immersed. So I started with talent acquisition and transitioned into L&D, learning and development, and then HR generalist roles, supporting roles, and business partnering. And then I ended up in change management, which is something I've decided, okay, this is where I'm going to sit, because I do enjoy moving. I enjoy the entire transformation that happens when you focus on a future, a desired future, and then the process of getting from where we are today to that point, and then looking back and thinking, wow, we did this. So that really fascinates me, especially when it impacts the business in very clear, distinctive ways. So yes, that's how I ended up here, essentially as a HR professional for the past going on 17 years now.
17?
Yeah, because I started early and stuck with it, pretty much. And as for being here in Estonia, well, I started out coming here because I wanted to extend my education, get a second qualification. And then I've always loved Europe and pretty well traveled. So I thought, okay, let me find a nice, quiet European country that speaks English without any international drama, and where, you know, I could maybe find, just see what happens. And then a friend of mine says, oh, why don't you go to Estonia? And I said, okay, where's that? And then I did some research, and the more I researched, the more I was fascinated by Estonia. And especially the, I think what really intrigued me was the change management, you know, focus, the transformation that is going on in Estonia, especially with building Estonia as a tech destination for not just Europe, but the world. So that was extremely fascinating to me. And that's why I'm here. Yeah. So I'm studying and working at the same time.
All right. And where are you studying?
Oh, I'm studying at Minor for a master's degree in international business and entrepreneurship.
All right.
Yes.
Exciting. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
Helene?
Yes, my journey in HR. I've always wanted to do HR. Yes.
Okay.
I'm my major actually is psychology. So I was actually thinking, okay, should I, you know, like really push through with, you know, being a psychologist, or go with, you know, like this industrial psychology. Unfortunately, during that time, this industrial psychology is not yet like popular back in the Philippines. I'm from the Philippines originally. And then I was like, okay, I'll just focus on, you know, the corporate world. And I started also as a recruiter. I think that's where everyone
I think so.
It always is like getting in the field.
Actually, that's where I learned a lot. I was a recruiter for around like 6 years, mainly working as a technical recruiter for startup companies. And then my role changed throughout the years. You know, it moved from recruiter to a generalist, and then from generalist more strategic, like a business partnering role. And I actually love doing business partnering because you get to work closely with business leaders. Mm-hmm. I've been working in HR for over 13 years, mostly working in IT startup companies. I love helping startup companies build HR from scratch. That's always been like my passion. Moving here, well, actually, my husband is also Filipino. He's a software engineer, so that explains why we're here. We've researched a lot about Estonia, and we again, the reason, same. We wanted like a very quiet, new country here in Europe, and we found Estonia, and we love it here. Been living here for almost 4 years.
Wow.
Yes.
And the little math says that, like, altogether you have around 30 years of experience in HR. So I
from
can't
different,
wait.
From different perspectives.
Yes. From different perspectives. But you both started from recruitment.
Yes.
And actually, recruitment is really, really a central part of this HR process, but also in terms of diversity and inclusion.
Exactly.
How open are we? New people and to
so
welcome
true.
Them. Mm-hmm. But maybe let's just start off with this, like your experience in being open to diversity from where you come versus in Estonia. Maybe you have some comparisons, or how have you experienced it so far?
Okay. I believe that for most, I'm Nigerian. And for most Nigerians and Africans, we are quite used to diversity and being open to differences, because most people might look and say, oh, Africa is Africa, you're all the same. No, you're not. Rather, no, we're not. In Nigeria alone, we've got more than 300 tribes and over 500 languages. And then we've got, so you've got the tribal differences. You've got the gender differences. Of course, gender is a big deal in Africa. You've got the social differences. There's a whole lot of differences that comes into play. So we've sort of gotten used to accepting differences. Yes, of course, there's the occasional clash here and there, but there is everywhere in the world. And because we've also been exposed to foreigners, for instance, colonialism, so we are also used to accepting the differences, even racial differences. Mm-hmm. We understand that people are different, people eat different foods, people have different opinions. So it's easier for us to go somewhere else and sort of adapt. But if you've been living in a place where we're all the same and the language is the same, the foods are the same, regardless of what part of the country you move to, then it's a little more of a challenge, you know, to speedily adjust or adapt to differences, especially different people then coming into your space. So my experience since I've been here when it comes to the accepting or adapting to diversity is that I think it's slower going for, you know, the people I've met, Estonians that I've met, some of the Estonians that I've met, some of the Estonians who are very well traveled, it comes very, you know, naturally to them. And those who've worked with multinationals, it's also easier for them, especially if you meet them in the workplace, because then it's already something they're used to, mm-hmm. as opposed to if you work with a smaller organization that isn't used to diversity at all, then it becomes, you really do feel like you're sticking out like a sore thumb.
Mm. So it seems that the smallness of a place as a country or organization actually plays a role. Mm-hmm. How much of you are exposed to differences, right?
It does.
What about you, Ellen?
Yeah, well, actually, same. So I'm from the Philippines. It's part of Asia. Asia is, you know, it's a big area. Mm-hmm. And we're different Asians, you know, like Filipinos, Japanese, mm-hmm. Chinese. And in the Philippines, we also have, like, a lot of dialects in our country. We're also, like, very used to it. We were, you know, colonized by this, you know, the Spain, U.S., Japanese. So we're really used to, like, diversity, even, like, people when it comes to religion. Like, it's already in our culture that diversity is, like, just a normal thing. So Uwa is actually, you know, we're actually sharing the same, thoughts here, because here, moving here, you know, like, one language, everything's the same. Food, like in my country, every, let's say, provinces have their own, you know, interpretation of food. Yeah. Here it's, again, like, it's a bit challenging. Again, like for me, I mentioned earlier during our conversation off, you know, the podcast, we research a lot before moving here. Mm-hmm. And for us, I think to be adjusted easily, we were ready to, you know, okay, like, diversity here is not that exposed compared to what we're used to. So we really need to adjust as well at the same time. So yes, it matters when it comes to, like, what kind of country, you know, the culture you'll be actually immersing to. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
And your favorite food is potatoes and dill.
Yes.
I heard.
And sour cream.
Sour cream, of course. The variety of dairy products.
I like very borscht.
I'm glad that you enjoy our culinary surprises. Yes, but when you think about what I heard from both of your stories was actually that the amount of how many differences you're exposed to culturally already plays a role on, like, how open you are for including different people from different backgrounds, ages, genders, so on. The list goes on, right, in terms of diversity. But what do you think would be the key element to actually, when talking about forecasting and thinking about my more diverse culture, organizational culture, but culture in general, what are the key elements to help people overcome or accept it as a norm, that diversity is a norm?
I think usually when people, when you, I guess when you're pushing or pitching change to any group of people, whether it's cultural change, even in organizations, if it's a culture transformation or it's a process change, whatever change you're pitching to people, you need to show them the benefits to them. That's where you always start from, because the average human is thinking, what's in it for me? What do I get out of it? How does it improve or impact me positively? So if you can come from that angle, whether it's dealing with Estonians as a whole or dealing with business leaders or colleagues in the workspace, it's all about how diversity can impact the team or the organization. And once you start pitching that and they can see, I would assume that everybody would be objective. I mean, that might be a bit idealistic, but I would assume that everybody would be objective to say, okay, if it's going to have this impact, then it's worth giving it a try. Mm-hmm. I always say, don't knock it till you try it, you know, especially if the benefits have been laid out. So you could start with team benefits, the business benefits, and then expand it from there. Even if it's a societal change or diversity adaptation or acceptance on a wider societal scale, then you can also look at it, the impact on the society, the impact on the country's GDP, the impact on the benefits that a growing population, a diverse population is bringing to the table. I understand last year, I think students of outside the EU contributed, I think, 16 million euros to taxes last year or the year before. So that's something significant. And with each year, it increases. So they are making contributions to the society one way or another. And it's not just in terms of taxes. It's also in terms of the impact they're making to businesses, the ideas that they are bringing, the innovation they are bringing. So all of these, and essentially, when you're more diverse, I think it makes people a bit more creative and innovative. Not just the person who's bringing in this different opinion, but it's like a symbiotic relationship. So you're feeding off of their energy, or you're feeding off of their creativity and their innovation. And then it expands your own worldview mm-hmm. or experience of how things should be done. So mm-hmm. I would say start with the benefits.
Yes, mm-hmm. Baby steps as
yes.
well.
Yes, and then take it from there.
Don't want to change the whole world, but small steps.
Yeah.
Very good.
Baby steps. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, for me, I think organizations should think, yes, benefits, and what's the goal? Right now, DEI is a very trendy word. Mm-hmm. And companies would like, oh, we want that. We want to be known as, mm-hmm. you know, very diverse
because
or global
cool.
because it's cool. I think business leaders should think, why? Why? Why are we doing this? What's our goal? And then from there, let's start, okay, right, benefits. If you don't have the goal, if your only goal is, oh, we want, you know, other people or, you know, let's say our clients or applicants think of us like very cool company because we're diverse, I don't think that's a right mindset. Mm-hmm. Because you really need to, it's much more deeper than that, you know, like, again, benefits, you know, performance, quality, mm-hmm. Being diverse is not just hiring people from minorities or people of color or from different religions. It's not about that. Diversity is about how are you going to make those employees feel accepted in an organization. And also, like, benefits, as what Uwa said earlier, it creates innovation. If you have different people from different backgrounds, you know, there's different perspective. Mm-hmm. So you get to explore what other people or what other backgrounds perspective in a certain situation, mm-hmm. a certain problem. And from there, you create a very good solution on how are you going to solve a certain, let's say, problem. Again, for me, a company should think first, what's the goal? Why are you doing this? again, what's in it for them and what's the benefits. I think let's start from there.
Mm-hmm. Like Simon Sinek says, start with why. Then go to how and what exactly. Right?
That's true.
So it's like when you have the strategic goal and then diversity helps you to achieve that goal, then you go on and say that we are a diverse and
welcome.
Right, but what do you think would be this strategic goals that diversity would help to actually achieve? We're mentioning the, mentioned the GDP and these like larger goals that might be, and then different approaches and different ways of thinking and this improvement of quality, but try to pin it down to a more concrete possible strategic goal. What would it be for a company?
I think for a company, let's start first maybe with recruitment. You know, if let's say the overall organization, okay, let's be diverse. Let's, you know, let's be an advocate for DEI. How? So recruitment first. How are we going to attract these people to apply in our company? Secondly, internal growth. Of course, right now, most companies have, you know, like people from somewhere. Start thinking about those people within. How are we going to help them? How are we going to help them be immersed and, you know, grow within the company? I think companies should also think about, you know, this cultural training. It's very helpful because, like, people from different parts of the world have a different way of communicating. I think cultural training is really, really important because it really helps understand other people, how, let's say, a manager manage people from, let's say, you know, somewhere in Latin America, somewhere in Asia, in Africa. You have, like, managers or business leaders should know how to deal with them. That's really important. I think that's some companies are lacking, you know, like, okay, let's just hire people from here. And then what's next? They don't do anything. And it actually creates clashes because people talk differently, think differently. So that's that. And also like mentoring as well, within as well, like growing people within, regardless of race, gender, you know, that's for me, that's, let's start from there. If companies start thinking, okay, let's proceed, let's start with these steps. So
do you have anything to add? Or
just a little bit, because it sort of reminds me of when in Unilever we identified a diversity problem. We had fewer women in leadership positions than men, and fewer younger people in leadership positions than older people, because Nigeria is essentially a hierarchical culture. So it's about men, and the older you are, the more experienced and knowledgeable and skilled you're perceived to be. So we decided, okay, and then we did some, feasibility studies and found out that companies with higher numbers of women at, you know, at the leadership positions or at leadership levels outperformed organizations with fewer or zero women. And I'm talking not just in terms of, you know, the quality of the employee engagement, the quality of their culture and their people, but financial performance. So earnings before interest and taxes were usually higher than their counterparts with fewer numbers of women. And then when we brought it down to team levels, teams with more females in, influential positions also tended to outperform teams that didn't have female voices, you know, listened to and their opinions or input executed. So we started with, this is our why. We want to outperform, you know, our peers. And then we started with how are we going to do it? First of all, like you said, recruitment. Mm-hmm. So we started with a policy, recruitment policy that stated, okay, so when we've got two people who are the best choices, we'll go with the female. At least to even, that's the entire purpose of DEI, the E there is equity, equality. So the idea was to even the playing field. Not that, okay, women are going to be better. We already have a 70 to 30 or 60 to 40 ratio. So now we want to even it out. And essentially that's what we did. So we started with our people. And then you find other processes that would also help support these people. So we're bringing in women. What do women need? A place that they can bring their kids to so that they're not worrying about childcare and other things. A place where when it's time for maternity leave, they're not going to be worried about losing their jobs. So you have to factor in all those things that would make these differences, the diversity, comfortable for these people you're bringing in. And then you sensitize the people who are already existing, who are thinking, oh, why are you making life better or easier for them? We're just trying to help them get equal treatment. You know, so the men who were complaining, oh, but it's not fair. So you mean if a man needs this, he won't get? No, he will get. But we're prioritizing the females because they've never gotten in the first place. And then you put in programs and trainings to help them understand that viewpoint and the why of it.
And what kind of results did you see afterwards?
Oh, it was great. Right, yeah? Now, if I checked, I think at least I know that there are four direct. At the time, there was only one who happened to be my boss and mentor who was at the director level, one female out of eight. And now I believe there are three, though at the time, you know, because essentially, like you said, it's baby steps. You don't expect to change things dramatically. It's never even a good idea to change things so drastically and dramatically all in one go. So you start by building from the ground up. So we started with our management trainees. So usually we have nine management trainees every year, and then they are built to become directors and all. And then we had at the time 6 females to 3 males, just to balance it out, because we always knew that at the end of the day, 40% make it to directorial level. So you groom them, it takes about 5 years for them to get to that level, yeah, because it is fast track process. So now, I haven't checked recently, but last I checked, I know Gineka, who started with us as a management trainee, is now a regional director of sorts. Yeah, and I think one of our roles even includes DEI. Mm-hmm. So that's great.
Yeah. Oh, if I may add, this kind of like studies, data, what we've discussed earlier, that's really important. I think organization, let's say HR, should start collecting data. Mm-hmm. You know, like how many female, how many, you know, the age. Let's start with that, because how are you going to create these kinds of strategies if you don't have any data? So let's start from that. That's also a very, very good key when creating strategies when it comes to DEI.
So, yeah, and we're talking about data-driven HR for a long time already.
Absolutely. Yes.
So making the picture clear about the diversity in your organization.
You know, it always does, because that's what feeds everything else. You look at, and then you look at the numbers. And HR has the most dense data in every organization, because you have all of your people data.
Yeah, exactly.
And half the time, HR doesn't do anything with it. At the end of the year, you should start with looking at your numbers, and that feeds the strategy for the next year. Otherwise, it's just useless information.
It's a useless information. Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. We're talking about also how to make people more open to diversity. And you mentioned L&D approaches, which means that we need to work with people and their mindsets. Yeah. So what have you seen are these key elements, or maybe some good examples on how to work on that? So how to do different trainings, what topics should they cover, what kind of other initiatives have you seen or experienced that have made this change making a bit more easier?
From my previous organization, what we did is this kind of focus group discussions. It's really encouraged in our company, because employees get to speak. And then from there, we thought, okay, there's a problem here. I think hearing what employees think about it, and then informing them, oh, this is the outcome of the focus group discussion. I think giving them a voice, and you know, employees, regardless, you know, like I think the overall employees. If you have like a group of people who are very diverse, it would be good to have like a focus group discussion and, you know, ask their opinion. Like, okay, what are your thoughts about DEI? Like, how is our organization can make you feel welcome and feel part of it? It's nice to hear from them directly. And then, you know, create some project or projects together with them. And because it's good that the info came directly from the people. It's hard because like, oh, I just thought of this because, you know, other companies is doing this. No, we need to know what is this DEI project within the company, because each companies have their own, let's say, culture. And each companies have different ways on how to manage it. I think focus group discussions is really important. That's what we did before. Also, the cultural training that I mentioned earlier, we did that at an early stage during onboarding. I remember I was actually leading that in the Philippine site because we were dealing with colleagues from different parts of the world. So with that, like we started with onboarding, doing a training, like a one whole day training just for cultural like exposure, like how to talk to, let's say, Americans, how they, you know, speak, how to talk with let's say Israelis. And it's, we actually received a good feedback from that. Of course, data, you know, you start with doing, you know, surveys to really know if your project is effective or not. And then we actually saw a really good feedback from all the new hires that this is something new for us, like cultural training. Now we know how to deal with them at an early, you know, part of their job. Yeah, that's my experience previously, and I think it helped a lot. Yeah.
Did you see any business results as well? Something that happened, you know, along the way, apart from the feedback from the people, yes, but actually the outcomes.
Actually, from the business leaders from the headquarters from the US, like, oh, you know, our communication now is much more clear, because, you know, us Filipinos are known to be very passive, very quiet. We don't usually say something if we're asked. You know, Americans, they're very, you know, straightforward. They want something. Okay, tell me what they want. So now when we started that, of course, again, data, I started asking surveys from managers, and they actually said like, oh, this is really effective, because it's much more easier to communicate to our team there in the Philippines or our team there in Israel. So yeah,
and it seems that it's doing a lot, or has a lot to do with actually the expectations and understanding what are the expectations, and therefore you can, you know, make your voice more heard. What do you want to add about?
Just that the same strategy applies. So, for instance, I'll use Unilever again, because it's a multinational company present in pretty much every country in the world. And Nigeria, Unilever Nigeria, was one of their biggest markets for Unilever Global. So we always had colleagues from different parts of the world sent to Unilever Nigeria, and our people also sent outside as well. So we also had to, it was more education for the people coming in as opposed to the people already here, because we're used to, you know, foreigners, we're used to diversity. So not essentially a problem, because people kept coming and going. We learned how to interact with the different cultures, the different races coming. So for the foreigners coming in, the colleagues coming in, we then took them through similar programs where they are taught, okay, this, if a Nigerian is saying this, it doesn't necessarily mean
this, you know. Our language, our culture is more contextual, very contextual. So yes does not always mean yes. You know, there's flexibility in the yes.
Yes,
you can relate, right?
I can relate.
Exactly. So we come from cultures where everything is in black and white and business isn't always conducted in the office. So we can be, you know, sealing a big deal at a pub. So all of those little details. And then a lot of the things you can't be taught in a class by an expert. And I put expert in air quotes. A lot of these you learn and adapt by actively doing. Like Elaine mentioned, you give projects and make it a multi-diverse project, a people project. So you have people from different departments. So it's multifunctional, it's multiracial, it's multicultural, it's multigender, you know, put them all together. And with time, as you keep mixing up, you know, the people who make up the projects, then diversity becomes a non-issue. It just becomes a given. It becomes natural. It becomes, okay, we're giving this task to this person because they can do it. It's no longer because this person is from this culture, that it ceases to be a major reason.
Mm. Yeah. Especially knowing that we learn the best from our experiences.
Exactly.
Then this approach is actually a very good example of social learning. Yeah. That there might be some input from, you know, from the trainers and from these like more organized approaches, and then something that's organically happening and giving people this experience of collaboration.
Mm-hmm. And the organic part is always the strongest.
Yeah, but we need to talk about the challenges as well,
right?
Yes, the main challenges, you know, because there are a lot of challenges.
Yes,
and what I picked up from our discussion so far is that it might be that the biggest challenge is how people think about work, about the structures, about organization, but also how exposed they are to different other people. And taking Estonia as an example, because you have a clear example here of living here, and knowing that we are a rather small country, more and more exposed to different people from all around the world, from different backgrounds and so on, but we still are in this process and making the baby steps. What do you think, and in your experience, have been these challenging parts for you as somebody who came to live here, and what kind of developments have you already seen? And I heard that you have already seen some developments, so can you share the challenging parts as well?
I can share my first year here. So I was, of course, like looking for a job. I actually encountered companies that are, advertising their companies that they're, you know, global. And then
I hear the irony already.
I heard it too. And then I've encountered a couple of final interviews, and of course they didn't pick me, and the reason is because I'm not local. Yes, again, no hard feelings. I was expecting that, but there you can really see now if they're advertising their company as global, and the ad is in English, and there's no like one sentence there saying, oh, we need, or preferably speaks Estonian. There's no clause there. It means that you're open to, you know, to everyone. And then you will hear at the end that, oh, because you're not Estonian. Mm-hmm.
But was it really something that they said to you?
Yes.
Well.
Yep.
Yes.
I've been here 9 months. I've experienced it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And It's improving step by step, baby steps. I was just lucky to get hired by a company that they really don't think about where I came from. For them, the most important is experience and your skills. I think companies should start thinking about that. Let's not think about, again, stereotypes and bias is there. All of us have that.
We don't. It's mm-hmm. human nature. Mm-hmm. But I think when it comes to business, let's think of skills,
yeah.
experience, attitude. Let's just focus on that, and let's not think about race, gender, religion, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Let's start with those three: skills, experience, and attitude, and that's it. I think companies should start thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And from there, I hope they start thinking beyond the person, you know, the appearance, basically.
So, yeah. So first step would be actually to work with this unconscious bias.
Exactly.
Bring it into consciousness. Mm-hmm. And then you can eliminate it more easily.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. Yeah. I mean, again, stereotypes. We all have those.
Yeah. Essential for living.
Exactly.
As a human being. Yeah.
But if you're in a business, then think business. Think as business,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Think skills. Think attitude. Mm-hmm. Think experience.
Yeah.
Like, is this person has the experience, has the skills, mm-hmm. has the right, you know, like qualifications to do the job? That's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. What
yeah.
about you, Uba?
Yeah, okay. I mean, Elaine's essentially said it all. I'll just add that, yes, there will be challenges in most multicultural, multiracial teams. There'll be communication barriers, especially in a place like Estonia. Mm-hmm. There'll be cultural differences, huge, especially for people who come from Africa and Asia. We're very, will I say, vibrant culture. We talk loud.
Yes.
We dance loud. We, a lot of the times, also dress loud. So everything is boom out there compared to Estonians who are quite reserved. So there's got to be a lot of support for both sides, you know, to understand that the differences are fine. We need to accommodate each other. I think one of the challenges when you try to make one, you mold one into the other, then you lose the essence, the value of diversity. If everyone starts to think and act and, you know, be the same, then what's the point? I think I wrote an article about, you know, cloning when it comes to recruitment and diversity on LinkedIn, because essentially you lose the innovativeness and the creativity of getting ideas from different sources. That's why when you're doing research, you look at a variety of materials to get a very holistic picture, get ideas from every angle. And then, of course, there's the chances that decision-making processes will be slower if you have a more diverse team, because then there's so many ideas that you need to factor in, and it makes you slow down a little. But it also adds value in that in the end, you know that the decision you've arrived at, you know, considered the differences, the different ideas, the opinions, the input, everything to come with that decision. For communication barriers, if you've got, so for instance, I'll use Elaine's example, which has also been my experience, where some jobs would require an Estonian speaker. And I'm thinking, for some jobs, it's not really necessary.
Exactly.
You know, like, why? If you've got 99.9% of your team or the workforce Estonian speakers, one more is not going to topple the system. If anything, if they are struggling with a task that requires Estonian, they've got 99.9% of the workforce to support. That's why they are a team. You will support each other. I can bet you that there will be areas that the 99.9 might require some inputs from this 1% or this 0.01% that, you know, their diversity would add immense value, you know, without the language being a factor. So I would say be more open to, especially if your working language is English. But if it's not English and you're still a business or an association or a group that deals with multicultural, multi-language people or clients or professionals, then you need to start thinking that perhaps it's time to broaden our horizon, expand our viewpoint, and open up to the growing community, the growing multicultural community that Estonia is becoming. Mm-hmm. In another decade, Estonia is going to be a big multicultural country. And they say those who don't adapt get left behind. And that's what essentially happens to businesses that don't adapt to change. You get left behind, you lose out. There are so many companies we can't even remember their names now because they refuse to adapt.
Exactly. Mm. And the world itself helps actually essentially to adapt.
Exactly.
Or,
exactly.
You know, you'll be left out.
Mm-hmm. And you know, change is happening like at warp speed right now. You wake up tomorrow, there's something new.
Yep.
Wake up the day after, what you knew yesterday is obsolete.
Yep.
So you've got to keep moving, you've got to keep adapting. And how much easier and better is it that to be open to differences?
Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to continue this conversation, but it's time to wrap up. And I have one question essentially left for you.
Okay.
We've been covering many, many topics, many, many ideas, but let's try to now wrap it up to three main steps that any person who would like to work towards more inclusive, more equitable, and a more diverse culture, be it in a company or in a team, three steps that they could do, baby steps.
Three steps each or one, two?
I would like to have from each, but let's see how it goes.
Three steps. I think for me, maybe for someone, you know, like if they're already working with, you know, like a diverse organization, my advice would be don't be afraid to ask that person. You know, like ask, let's say, you know, you're from here. I heard this. Is this true? Don't be afraid to ask. Talk. Basically, just talk to people. Ask, don't be afraid, talk, because you'll get to understand more. People like us, we're very happy to actually share our where we came from, right? And we also do ask, you know, like you, Estonians, like I also ask, like, oh, is it true that this? Because for me, I want to understand. Again, that's how you open your mind, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's one. Two. Third, again, be open. That's it. Be open. Try to explore and think, why is this important? Why are we here now? You know, just explore. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to be afraid to explore, especially now. The world, as you mentioned, it's changing.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know, change is the only permanent thing in the world.
Yep.
Plus taxes. I think that's it. Ask, communicate, and explore. Don't be afraid to explore. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah.
Okay, I would come from, since you've done the like people perspective, I would come from the business perspective. So I would say HR leaders and business leaders starts with your why. You know, why do we want to? And you're going to feed into your why with data, numbers, do your research, use your internal data, explore external data, make a comparison, and then you decide how to go about it. So that's essentially one and two. And then I would say be open-minded. Be willing to take chances and risks. It can be a risk. I mean, not every diversity strategy works out the first time around. So take the risk, start, do something, and then modify as you go along. It doesn't have to be perfect the first time around. Most processes, most changes, most transformations don't go smoothly from the first go. So be willing to go through the pains, adapt, and then till you get to where you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Thank you. And it was a pleasure having you here in our podcast. I wish you all the best for your future and keep on being curious.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.